T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back to Overnight America. What a cool book. It's called Lookout America, The Secret Hollywood Studio at the Heart of the Cold War. If you've ever seen footage of a nuclear blast, oh my, this is the studio that filmed it. Funded by the government, sort of secret, mostly secret, but a lot of the information that's available now is extremely fascinating. Author Ned O'Gorman sharing some of it with us here on Overnight America. You know, did anyone ever get sick? Some of the cameramen, they're working with nuclear blasts,
yeah,
and,
sure,
you know, radiation,
sure,
and things.
You know, and there's a lot that's sort of thrilling and fascinating about this story, but there's also a lot that's tragic about this story. And certainly, the illnesses the cameramen and other workers later developed is part of the tragic part of the story, for sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, some of the archive footage, is that in public domain, or is that something that's still controlled by someone?
Yeah, much of it is. And so if you, in fact, we have built, because we've collected so much archive footage over the years, we built our own website that your listeners can go to. It's called lookoutamerica.org. Mm-hmm. All one word, lookoutamerica.org. And there are well over 100 films on that site, as well as many still photographs. And then we put up a lot of our own archival documents that we were able to acquire over the years, that annual reports, semi-annual reports, memos, that sort of thing, just to make all our research as much as possible publicly accessible.
Wow. Ned O'Gorman, Lookout America is the name of the book, The Secret Hollywood Studio at the Heart of the Cold War. So what was your first introduction to this Hollywood studio? And it takes a lot of, you have to have a lot of passion to put a book together. And I'll tell you, when you start to compile all the things that you've learned and you see the enjoyment other people get out of learning the things you've just learned, what a cool thing, you know, to be able
super
to share
cool
that sort of thing. So where did it all start for you?
Yeah, well, you know, it started in the Eisenhower Presidential Library, probably in 2005. I was writing a book on President Eisenhower at the time, and part of that meant spending, days and days in archives there at the Presidential Library. And I came across a memo about President Eisenhower having seen a film at the White House about a nuclear test, and that he was sort of bowled over by this film and declared to his staff that everybody in America should see this film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured out that the film was called Operation Ivy, and I spent the next few days trying to dig the film down. And I actually found a redacted copy of it online on the Internet Archive and watched it. And so that's really what got me into it, and I saw it was made by this group called Lookout Mountain Laboratory. And so within a few months, I had gotten my colleague here, Kevin Hamilton, to come on board with me, and we just started digging and investigating together. And like I said, it ended up being a 10-year project and took us all over the country into all kinds of places to get what we needed to write this book. And
mm-hmm.
so what you have there in the book is really the fruit of that decade's worth of research.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the patches that you have copies of in the mm-hmm. pack. These would make for excellent T-shirts. I wonder if if it's possible to take something like that and make a shirt off of that, because they're just really cool logos on there.
They are really cool logos. Oh. I totally agree, yeah.
And the same thing with Eisenhower. You have to have some sort of memorabilia. Is there anything that you were able to purchase for your own personal collection, to maybe from the site, or anything that was used?
You know, I didn't steal anything. I didn't purchase anything. I did, in the course of our adventures, get to go into a secretive 1950s era hollowed out mountain out west, where I got to see the Eisenhower bedroom. This is where Eisenhower would have gone in the case of a nuclear attack, or one of the several places in the country he would have gone. So, but I couldn't take that home with me.
Well, that's cool. How does it look? Is it something that would have been?
It looked awful, to be honest.
Really?
You know, yeah. You know, it would not be much of an existence. You know, especially if you're holed up in there for however long they were going to hole up in the case of that kind of an event.
Well, he wasn't sleeping on a cot, was he? Did it at least look like?
No. He had a bed. He had a bed, but it was it looked a bit like a prison cell.
Really? I was going to say more or less like a Holiday Inn or something like that from that time frame.
No. This was very industrial looking.
Okay. Well, if people have the same fascination for this like you, how can they find the book? And you already mentioned your website. I'm sure they can get a lot of great info there.
Yeah. Well, the book's available on Amazon. It's available and via other booksellers as well. So all they have to do is dig around a little bit, search the title, Look Out America, and maybe Hollywood Studio or something along those lines, and they will find it. It's a little pricey for many of your listeners. It's a $45 book, but I will tell them that they're going to get their money's worth. There's over 500 images in the book, and so it was an expensive book to make, and we're not making any money off of it. We're just wanted to get it out there as cheaply as we could, and this is about the best that we could do in that regard. So that and our website, I'd say, are the two most reliable places to go and learn more about the film, about the studio.
Right. Lookoutamerica.org is your website, where you have some of those archived videos and photos. One last silly question. So, you know who Conan O'Brien is?
Yeah, of course.
Well, he has an Eisenhower coffee mug that he sits on his desk. He's had that forever. You have to have something Eisenhower at the house, right?
You know, this may sound a little strange to you, but when you spend that much time with a figure, in my case, I wrote a book about Eisenhower, and I've spent a lot much more time with his papers and such since then, I really don't want anything around to remind me of him.
You want to leave that at the work you've already created. You want to leave that at the door. I see.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
You don't always want to be reminded of the long nights at the library where they're trying to kick you out for you've been there too long. I get it.
That's right.
Okay, lookoutamerica.org is the website. The Secret Hollywood Studio at the Heart of the Cold War. Co-author Ned O'Gorman along with Kevin Hamilton. You're just over there in Illinois. Thank you so much.
University of Illinois.
Oh, University of Illinois, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us here on KMOX.
Sure, Ryan. Thank you very much.
He joins us on the Quiver River Electric Guest Line. Do you have any idea any of that stuff exists? Wasn't that cool? I thought that was really neat myself. I really liked it. All right, so 314-436-7900. I got a great interview with George Magnus coming up, and he looks at the relationship between the United States and China. And I also wanted to bring up a scenario to you. Is it okay if the guy doesn't pay on a date? This is controversial online. There's an example I want to bring up to you. And some guys say, absolutely, you have to pay every time. Some guys say, not if they act like this. So maybe we'll get to that if we got some time coming up too on Overnight America KMOX.
News at the top and bottom of the hour. Mornings and afternoons. KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America. Oh, it's good to be back with you. I really like that. Ned, if you're still listening, thank you so much for that interview. I really enjoyed it. Can I still bellyache about having to shovel, or is it past the bellyaching time? I feel like there's only a limited window of bellyaching allowed. Charlie calling in from Minnesota. Hey, Charlie, what's going on?
Not much. Just chilling out.
Chilling literally? Are you outside right now?
No.
Okay, for the best. So what's going on?
I feel bad for you guys down there.
Why?
20 inches of snow fell in parts of Missouri. A woman and her daughter died in a semi-collision 80 miles out of Kansas City.
Yeah. There was a lot of accidents and crashes across the state this past weekend because of the snow.
Oh, I believe it.
We were right in the middle of the heavy stuff. St. Louis didn't receive as much as they originally called for, but still enough for there to be a lot of problems that Friday night. Yeah, it's sad. It's you hate hearing these stories.
Oh, yeah. Well, up here, let's see, before you got what you got, we went through three different waves of it. One day, okay, I go out there at 3 in the morning, do my neighbor's driveway, got it all nice and shiny like it is now. Here comes the rain and snow. I went back out there and did it again. And then the third time, but each time I just let the shovel slide its way down like a dog.
Charlie, what are you doing 3 a.m. scraping sidewalks off? Why that early?
Because everybody is careless about how they walk. Me, I slide across the ice and all. Everybody else is walking over it and falling. So I'm out there at 3 o'clock in the morning doing it.
You're being extra careful. None of the other neighbors are out there that late. I mean, are you the only one that has a cleared walkway at that point?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So what's that going to help if someone walks by? I mean, they'll be nice for that 30 yards or 40 yards or whatever in front of the house, but after that, it's done.
Well, the plow truck came through and left this Titanic iceberg in front of the driveway, so I couldn't break it.
Titanic iceberg.
We just drove over it.
Uh-huh. How'd that go?
Not good.
No. Yeah.
But in time, it melted down and broke up, and then we're back in place now. But now they're saying we're going to get more snow coming in Friday.
Do you have a snow blower?
No.
You're doing that all by shovel?
Yeah.
How do you feel
after
when you're done?
After I've had three back surgeries, this last one last month, well, I got out there and thought, let me see what happens.
Wait, you had a back surgery last month and you're out there shoveling already?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, Charlie. Tell me that wasn't just your doctor cringed when he heard that.
Well, I did it before and I broke, twice the disc fell out of place. This last one, pieces of broken bone was found in the leg. He cleaned it out.
Wait,
said, get out of here now.
Are you saying that you shoveled and bone from your back went down to your leg?
No, the disc just fell out of place.
Oh, okay. I thought you said the bone traveled from your back to your leg. I'm like, how is that possible?
Pieces of bone had broken up and was floating around in the leg.
Oh, man. How much pain medication are you on?
None now.
How do you do it? I'm belly aching about going out there and shoveling for about an hour and a half just from this past weekend. I'm still belly aching about that.
Oh, well, I told the doctor. I told him I was taking 500 milligrams each, 8 Tylenol tabs at 500. He says, you're going to blow your liver and kidney. I got a tank. Blood tests come back. Mm-hmm. He says, a little bit high, but you're doing good. I told you I got a tank, and I did that all the way up till surgery.
So when you say you have a tank, you mean you're kind of built like a mule. You can just keep going.
Right.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Some people are like that. I'm jealous of those type of people. I really am.
Yeah, but other than that, yeah. That's why I feel bad about all that, you know, the weather. Seriously, about the weather you guys are getting. Mm-hmm. It bypassed it up here. Now we're going to be suffering because below zero's coming in right behind it.
Yeah, you're getting the first wave of that Arctic blast that's coming through, or whatever the cold air from Canada. You're first to hit it in Minnesota, then it travels its way down here.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I thought, well, I can put up with kind of a little bit of below zero, but not so much all at once, but still.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, but the snow, yeah, I'll go out there after it snows and test it and see how heavy it is. And then if it's not so heavy, I'll just let the shovel slide down the driveway.
How old are you, Charlie?
I'll be 60 here in a month.
Okay, so I don't mean
in
this.
About, let's say, 3 weeks from 3 weeks from Friday.
Charlie, I don't mean this to be offensive. If I had to guess how old you were, I'd say you were older than 59. You sound like
good,
someone. Yeah, that sounds like you've been around. I would have guessed 79.
Well, I told him, people say I walk around and act like I'm 90. I said, good, I'm 90.
All right, so I don't feel as bad. In my mind, I thought, oh, here's someone that's close to 80 out there shoveling at 3 a.m. None of your neighbors will find you in time if something did happen. But, you know, I feel better now. You're 59. You're probably healthy enough where you're okay to do that.
Not really, because the doctors and them, when I told them about it, they did give me dirty looks and told me, if you don't stop doing it, we're not going to do no more for you. I thought,
they're going to stop helping you? They're doctors. They're not allowed to do that. They're supposed to help you.
Well, no, we were just kidding about it.
Okay.
You know, they said you got to be careful and don't go out there doing things like that because you're going to make it worse. Well, even people like some old friends of mine I helped, no, yeah. Hands off.
I get it.
They even put the brakes on me.
I get it. Well, there's people out there.
Care.
They care about you, man. They do. All right, Charlie.
Yeah.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for checking in.
Well, you be careful out there and don't overdo it.
No, I know. I bellyache a lot, but I feel like I'm still within my means. I'm not out there a month after back surgery trying to take care of this stuff, even though I would still for my family, you know.
Right. But I mean, I get a laugh. I kind of laugh when you are bellyaching because it is a pain in the neck or whatever you want or even lower, but still, things have got to be done.
I get it. You got to take care of business. Thanks, Charlie. Good to hear from you.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Month removed from back surgery. He has discs in his back that have traveled to his legs. No, he doesn't. Oh, man. So I'm not allowed to bellyache. He calls in. Multiple back surgeries, a month removed from one. He's still out there, 3 a.m., scraping the pavement with his shovel, not a snowblower, and does the neighbors as well. Wow. Totally. Charlie's a hard worker, man. Maybe I'm just lazy, but first thing I did yesterday when I came into the studio, I thought, where could I plug in a heating pad? Ah, my back! I'm getting old, man. Ugh, getting old. We're going to get to our next guest. His name is George Magnus. What's going to happen between the United States and China? It's a big question. United States still negotiating, and he's an expert. He knows what he's talking about, and I had a lot of questions for him because there are a lot of questions left of exactly what's going to be happening. And you see the celebrity Big Brother, they announced their next cast. A couple of familiar names. One person we actually had on the show. Woo! We have one person that'll be competing that was on with us just a couple of months ago, which is pretty neat. But I want to also get to this other story, and it doesn't look like we'll have time this hour. Maybe I'll save it for next hour. I want to bring a scenario to you about a guy that took a girl out for a date, and when is it appropriate for the guy not to pay? Okay? A lot of guys listening right now, very traditional. You always pay. That's how it works. Well, things are different today in the dating world, and I'll explain. Coming up on Overnight America, KMOX.
Overnight America and Ryan Recker continues on KMOX.
Hey, pop this on in your phone. Listen to this when you shovel. You'll get done twice as fast, won't you? Oh, my back! Oh, my back! Joining us now is an associate at the China Center at Oxford University, a new book out called Red Flags, Why Cheese China is in Jeopardy. George Magnus, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So I wanted to talk about the relationship United States and China have before we actually get into what you think might be happening in the next 90 days. So what really led us to this point where we're talking about trade wars and tariffs and the United States and China not getting along when it comes to their policy?
Well, I think a couple of things, you know. The first is I think it's been building over the last several years, actually. So I think there was a time when there was a kind of a thinking, certainly in the U.S. administrations, many of them, that, you know, if only, you know, the West was open and, generous to China and, you know, included it in, you know, international institutions and so on, that that eventually China might, you know, kind of become a little bit more liberal and become a little bit more open, become like us, basically. And I think probably in the last few years, I think that realization certainly set in that wasn't going to happen. And it was kind of reinforced, really, by the second thing, which is that when Xi Jinping came to power in 2012, it was obviously, he came to power in the wake of the financial crisis. Obviously, the West had been floored by this awful economic and financial shock. China, seemed to be riding high and was believed in its own kind of narrative that it was special and that it was on a kind of a path to economic greatness and so on and so forth. And I think that in terms of China's foreign policy and its kind of diplomatic stance, it became a little bit more truculent, a little bit more, feisty. So I think we've just gotten to the stage, and I think President Trump clearly, captured that kind of mood, which is that, China has gotten away with things that, other countries normally wouldn't have gotten away with, and it's time to call it a day. So that's kind of why I think it all came to a head last year, to be honest.
Mm. Well, if you were to look at the two economies as standalone economies, I guess, and you said become like us when it comes to the way that we hope China would progress, and over the years, they really didn't go in that direction. So how is the United States economy and the Chinese economy similar and different?
Well, I mean, on the face of it, they couldn't be more different because the United States obviously has a very, very small state sector. It's a democracy, so there are at least two major political parties, and, China just doesn't work like that. China is a single-party state. They don't have elections for the leadership or for the cadres of the senior echelons of the party. The state plays a very prominent role in the economy and in society. The parallel, if you want to put it like that, is that China has had a very vibrant private sector. So one of the remarkable things about China during the last 30, 35 years has been the dynamism of its private sector. And in fact, there's quite a kind of a row going on within China today between some people who believe that, the private sector has, quote, fulfilled its historic mission, and, now the state really should be in charge of everything, and others who believe that China can only thrive if it has a continued thriving and dynamic private sector. So that's a big issue in China, but it's not true to say that, China is a sort of a communist country in the way that we used to think of the Soviet Union, because private enterprise and market mechanisms, it's just not the same that we are familiar or comfortable with. But China has got, it does get it, that, that private enterprise is a good thing and can help make the country prosperous and improve people's living standards.
Mm. George Magnus joining us, an author of Red Flags, Why China is in Jeopardy. And you said that for the last several years they've been working on this and really there hasn't been a lot of progress. So let's say we've been trying to improve relations with China, or let's say we've tried to come up with some sort of ways where our two countries can play nicely with each other. So what is there any way in the next 90 days something actually could happen, or is it just going to be like what we've seen the last couple of decades?
Well, it's, you won't be surprised if I say it's a tough call, because we don't really know what's going on. I mean, the optics seem to be quite reasonable on both sides, and on one level, the kind of mid-level negotiators, well, actually, to be fair, and President Trump himself, have indicated that the negotiations are going reasonably well. On the other hand, people, journalists and people that follow these things and get off the record briefings from participants seem to indicate that on the hard stuff, so on the easy, relatively easy stuff, which is like on, agricultural imports from the United States into China, or energy imports, or tariffs on certain items, and, maybe some other things that are, strictly speaking, trade. That there may, it may well be that there will be something that they will call an agreement, and that will forestall further any implementation of tariffs, which are now in suspension.
Yeah.
But the hard stuff, which is about the transfer of technology, the industrial policy that China runs inside its own country, the protection of intellectual property and the avoidance of plagiarism and theft and so on. These things, and market opening and having majority ownership, these kinds of things which actually American businesses and European businesses have been pitching for, and which are, I gather that they are centerfold in the, or centerpiece in the negotiations. It may not be possible to reach agreement on these things in 90 days or even at all. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to pay close attention to what is said about them and whether there might be, you know, an element to which, you know, the United States may pull back, that China may pull back, may compromise on something that's kind of, that looks okay, but whether it'll actually get to the heart of the matter, we'll have to see. I'd be skeptical about it, to be honest. Mm.
The book, Red Flags, Why Cheese China is in Jeopardy, author George Magnus joins us. We're in that 90-day waiting period to see if the United States and China can make some sort of trade deal. Will it happen? What are the roadblocks? What's going to happen if there's a different administration in the next couple of years? Lots of questions still need to be answered. We'll continue our conversation next on Overnight America KMOX.
Ryan Recker, Overnight America, the two best things in your night on KMOX.
The whole world is watching the United States and China, two of the largest economies. We're also wondering what's going to happen if there is a trade deal struck between the two. You know, that could change a lot. That could give a big, major uptick to both of our economies, but is also something that, historically speaking, hasn't all been productive. So we're going to talk more about that with George Magnus on the U.S.-China trade deal. He's got a new book out called Red Flags, Why Cheese China is in Jeopardy, here on Overnight America. And as much as you watch this and you're closely watching what goes on between the United States and China, what does the United States have to gain here? So let's say there is some sort of agreement made. Maybe it's not to the scale of some of the things you pointed out, like, you know, structural changes or forced technology transfers, or, you know, trying to make it so we're not losing all of our intellectual property, which is a really big deal. A lot of companies are scared about that. Let's say it's not to the grand scale of how it would work ideally. What would a win look like for the United States if they actually did make a deal?
Well, I imagine that the most transparent bits, which I think, you know, would grab the headlines and which I'm sure the government would like everybody to be aware of, would be the opportunities for American farmers to sell more to China, for energy producers to sell more to China. there could be some agreement. I mean, the United States and China have agreed these things before, but nothing's actually ever happened about allowing, let's say, credit card companies and financial companies to gain a bigger foothold in the Chinese market, or to be allowed to have majority ownership in joint ventures. I mean, these things, this is one of the things they're certainly talking about, right, and which the United States side is very, very cognizant about, is compliance, right? So if you say something, how do we know that you're going to be following through, and how do we monitor and scrutinize your actions to make sure that you're living up to your agreement? And that, I think, will be something which the United States will certainly be quite keen to follow up. Because it's not happened before. I mean, a year ago or more, you know, MasterCard and other credit card companies and credit rating agencies were supposed to be, setting foot in China and starting to build businesses there, and nothing's really happened. So, there certainly are upsides for individual groups of, you know, American workers or American sectors that could benefit from the resolution of some of the trade issues. But I think we need to pay a lot of attention to really whether the broader business community is satisfied with, the devil in the detail, basically. Mm-hmm. That's really what it's going to come down to.
The book is Red Flags, Why Cheese China is in Jeopardy. George Magnus joins us on Overnight America. So we have President Obama, and I guess going back to President Bush or Clinton, and you can go far. Big difference in personalities when you have a President Trump in there who's very big into letting everyone know he's going to be the negotiator. He wants to get in there and make sure everyone knows he's going to try to get the best deal he possibly can for the United States. What kind of instability do you see and the changeover in presidents with the way that maybe President Obama handled things, with the way President Trump might be handling things, and even looking forward to the future? Let's say there's another president in the future. Is this just going to be starting from scratch over and over and over again when it comes to China?
My personal view is I don't think it would be. I think because this is not just a White House phenomenon, because obviously it's what the president is articulating with his senior staff are issues that are shared by the Democrats. So this is a kind of a beltway phenomenon, mm-hmm. and it's not just a beltway phenomenon. It's also, I think, a Western phenomenon, because what we're also seeing is that in Britain, in Germany, in South Korea, in Japan, in France, governments are becoming more cagey, I would say, mm-hmm. about the terms under which their companies do business with and in China. And certainly the terms on which Chinese companies look to buy foreign companies when they come to, let's say, the United States or to Europe or to Canada. And we've seen, a very significant drop-off, let's say, in Chinese investment in Western economies in 2018. It's about a third as much as it was in 2017 and 2016. And part of this is, a good part of this really, is because of the, not for sale signs, which are basically being erected, particularly over technology companies and other companies which are perhaps sensitive from a military or technological standpoint. So, I don't think that this is something which has got a kind of a presidential cycle, if that's the question you were asking me. Mm-hmm. I think that, whatever happens in 2020 in this country, in your country, I think that it's going to continue as a sort of a theme. I mean, just how much the line between engagement and tension, varies. I mean, that's obviously mm-hmm. difficult to predict. But I do think that the relationship with China that we have in the West now is, you don't say, you never say never, or never mm-hmm. say always.
Sure.
But I mean, for the time being, I don't really see it's going to change. I think it's going to remain at an elevated state of tension. And that doesn't mean to say that we can't cooperate with the Chinese in lots of other different areas. But mm-hmm. I think that in these areas of kind of technology in particular and industrial policy, I don't really see I don't really see an agreement or closure coming about.
Now, I've seen a lot of the tech companies talk about some of the restrictions of how they have to change the way they operate when they go to China. They have special requests. You can't make the government look particularly bad. You can't report in a certain way. You have to block certain things. And some of these big tech companies here in the United States, the Googles and the Facebooks, they go through these ebbs and flows where they try to fight it. And other times they say, well, I don't want to give up the market share because, we're talking about billions of people here. So, then they kind of give in and they go back and forth. And there's a lot of talk about China, not necessarily with the tariffs, but even on the technology side. Do you guys talk about China as much in England like we do here in the United States?
Not as much, because it's obviously not as big an issue for us in the United Kingdom. We are otherwise consumed with something completely different, as many of your listeners probably know, which is
Brexit and all that. Yeah,
which has sucked the oxygen out of almost everything. But it is important, and it is certainly something which the government is starting to take more seriously, partly because if we do leave the EU, if the UK does leave the EU, I mean, some of the politicians are basically very kind of gung-ho about striking up trade deals with, China and other people, and actually it may not be that easy or desirable in some respects. But we're also very cognizant about the influence and even interference which is starting to come about through agencies of the Chinese government, which work their way into, you know, academia and business and politics in the UK and other countries, which we've been reading a lot of all over the world, really. So it is starting to become a much more sensitive issue. And why not? Because, after all, you know, it's an important country, it's the second biggest economy in the world, and what happens in China really has ramifications for everybody else nowadays.
Yeah, and we always wonder here, too, the timing of it. In our own economy, it's been a little rocky towards the end of 2018. It's starting to stabilize and pick back up 2019. If there were some sort of deal made with China, I'm sure that would have very positive economic indicators or anything that would happen here in the United States afterwards. So a lot of people were asking this, is this really the right time to tackle a problem like China? There's a lot of things on the United States plate right now. Is this the right time to try to work with China?
Well, you know, I don't think there's ever going to be a right time, because whatever time it was always going to prove to be disruptive. So I agree with you. I think, you know, if there is some semblance of something that we call a deal between now and the 1st of March, I'm sure that the, you know, business confidence would benefit, and the stock market would probably be a little bit cheerier because of that and so on. So it would have some positive spin-offs, but again, you know, the devil will be in the detail as to whether there's anything of substance which really, you know, will improve the dialogue and the relationship between the U.S. and China, and you know, we'll have to wait until that. We can make that judgment a little bit kind of later on in the year, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's you know, there will be some upside, I think, if there is some kind of arrangement, or at least we just need it not to get worse. I think that's probably the best way of putting it. So if President Trump just, you know, continues to freeze the tariffs that would have taken place on the 1st of January, doesn't extend it to the other half of goods imported from the from China. If that kind of status quo persists for this year, then that's probably, you know, from the point of view of business, that's probably a good result. But as I said, I don't think there was ever a good time to basically take issue with China about these matters. But I think it's true to say, I really believe it is fair to say, that somebody had to do it sometime, and we just, you know, we have to hope that it's managed well, but the consequences are things that are really important. So, I think, you know, we need to persevere with this.
Oh, man. I think that is a lot of people's motto here in the United States. Just don't get worse, please. Don't get worse.
I think that's probably right.
Universal, almost. Red Flags, Why Xi's China is in Trouble, author George Magnus. If someone wants to check out your book and all the research you've done, where can people find you?
Well, I have a website, which is www.georgemagnus.com. And, of course, the book's available at Amazon and other online booksellers. So,
Red Flags. That's an important look into American history. And if we want to look at some of the big deals that President Trump has tried to tout, this could be the biggest one for sure. Well, of course, with North Korea being one of their neighbors, could tie right into it. Thank you so much, George Magnus, for coming on to Overnight America.
My great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
He joins us on the Quiver River Electric Guest Line. Some really good interviews so far this show. We're only halfway there. Oh, overnight prayer. We don't have Bon Jovi in the rotation, do we? Let's see, what are we going to get to? I'll do the dating thing at the start of the next hour. So right after midnight, what are the dating things that have changed over the years? Before, you know, when I was young, I thought I knew everything. I thought that you always paid for the girl's date. You always didn't pay for the date. That sounds like it's an escort thing. You always paid for the date's meal. Like, if you took a girl out, you always paid. It wasn't even an option not to. But not anymore. So there's a lot of debate on that. So I'm going to bring that up coming up, too. You see Celebrity Big Brother announce their cast. Of all the people on there, there is one person we have had on this radio program, and that person, the Mooch, Anthony Scaramucci. He was the White House Director of Communications for 10 days. I like him myself. I thought he was I really liked the way he handled things, but he didn't really last. 10 days in, he was on right before the midterm election. And I think we had him actually the night before the midterm election. and we had a good conversation with him. Some of the other people on this list, I don't even know who half of these people are. Jonathan Bennett, best known as his role as Aaron on Mean Girls. Tamar Braxton. Let's see, R&B singer group The Braxtons. Don't know that either. Candy Burris. Burris went on to win a Grammy for writing TLC's hit song No Scrubs. Okay. Tom Green. Now I know who that is, at least. Comedian Tom Green. He's a wild one, mostly because of his persona as a comedian. He did some, you know, edgy things, and that's where he found a lot of his success. I've heard interviews of Tom Green. He's boring. Everyone says he's a great guy, a fun person, but his interviews are not like the way he is on screen. Lolo Jones, female, a few athletes compared to the winner in Summer Olympics, okay. Cato Caitlin, whatever, from the O.J. Simpson trial. Man, he looks different. Joey Lawrence. Whoa. Yeah, he was on that show Blossom for those years. Okay. This is going to be an interesting one. Ryan Lochte, the swimmer, 12-time Olympic gold medalist. Dina Lohan, Lindsay Lohan's mom. Natalie Eva Marie, former pro wrestler. Wow, there's a lot of big names on this. Dancing with the Stars doesn't even get a bigger cast than that. Wow. So that is Celebrity Big Brother. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.